is Eddie Volkman from 103.9 The Fox, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for April 18th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Today is tax day. If you haven't done your taxes, what the heck are you waiting for? Get that paperwork in.
It's a pound of flesh, baby. It's a pound of flesh. A few more pounds. I'm sorry. Did I say 1 pound? I didn't mean 1 pound.
Well,
most of us are willing to give up 1 pound.
Inflation.
Inflation. That's right.
Get that tax done. Get it in the mail. You got to do it. It's one of those things.
It's one of those things.
It's one of those things. You just get it done.
It's like a holiday that isn't.
It's like the holiday that was my weekend. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week, all weekend.
This was Easter weekend, but really was a Steve celebration weekend.
It might have been just nerd weekend, because Mystery Science Theater 3000 is back. It's on Netflix. 14 new episodes are available for you right now, and you should be watching these right now.
All right, so Steve, my guess is you've gotten through them all, and you're enjoying, you've got a satisfied look on your face.
I've gotten through half of them. I haven't gotten through all 14 episodes. I did watch 7 of them every moment of every day for the last 4 or 5 days now, and I love them, Chip.
Oh, right. Well, that makes me feel good, because, you know, this is a real passion program for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been waiting for it a long time. It's on.
18 years. It's been 18 years since Mystery Science Theater was on TV.
Anything particular you wanted to mention about the program?
This is definitely season 11 of this program. For those of you who ever watched it before and enjoyed it, you have no fear. Go ahead and watch these. Episode 1 is not my favorite, although I've seen that one the most out of all of the episodes. Episode 2, so far, is my favorite episode. I can actually say titles of episodes now, can't I?
I'm no longer
under a non-disclosure agreement. You really need to watch Cry Wilderness, Chip. You would actually find joy in this Harry and the Hendersons Bigfoot story that is so ridiculous.
Is that Harry and the Hendersons?
It is not Harry and the Hendersons. That's the point.
It is a somewhat version of one.
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
It is a almost direct ripoff of Harry and the Hendersons, and it is so ridiculous and so fun. You should be watching MST3K right now.
And real quick, Carvel Ice Cream responded to Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, that's episode 2.
Is it episode 2?
That is episode 2, sir.
All right. So they took the whale ice cream cake.
Fudgy the Whale.
And they made it into a money bag.
12 different designs are presented in episode 2, and Carvel Ice Cream did take one of their 12 designs and is apparently willing to sell that to you if you go to the Carvel Ice Cream and flash your credentials as a member of the Revival League. They will make you a money bag.
Well, then you have to choose between, you know, the money bag and Cookie Puss. I mean, how do you choose, Steve?
There's 12 to choose from if you watch episode 2. I do want to mention the Revival League. All I've been doing all week is watching Mystery Science Theater 3000 and having these discussions with this community of people on Facebook. If you are a friend of the Mystery Science Theater 3000, you need to join us on the Revival League on Facebook. We have a really tight-knit community. No spoilers. We've presented all the information in such a great way that the administrators on there have been sussing out all of the spoilers into a separate room where if you want to go into the spoiler room, go right ahead. Just great stuff.
All right, and so you also got to go to a Phantom event this last week.
Yeah.
So on Thursday, you got to see Riff Trax's version of Samurai Cop.
Yes. Riff Trax, for those of you who don't know, is the other group of people that used to be the Mystery Science Theater 3000 guys, and they segregated and they now run their own system called Riff Trax. And this movie is awful. This is a terrible movie, but boy, can those guys make a fun time out of an awful movie. Samurai Cop was quite the adventure. It's encoring tonight at 7 in your local theater. Go to fathomevents.com and find your local theater and go see see this movie.
And on Saturday night, we also had the BBC America. Mm-hmm. The BBC America.
The BBC.
That's right. Brought out Doctor Who.
Yeah. New episode of season 10. The pilot is the name of the episode.
And what we should mention is that there's going to be a special recording, an extra scrolling.
Yep.
Where a panel group
another
is going
panel.
To get...
Come with me. I need to discuss nerd things. I gathered a whole nother panel. We're going to put that out on the internet on Thursday. And there is where you'll find all of my opinions of Doctor Who.
And you'll set yourself up for the second episode, which will be coming out the following Saturday.
That's right. Little exciting. I'm a little excited, Chip. What did you get to see this week?
I got to see Inferno, Dan Brown, based on Dan Brown's book. And it stars, obviously, that guy who stars on Saturday Night Live so often, the guy that was Wilson's friend on...
The guy from Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies. That's right. Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, right.
So Tom Hanks...
Did he have weird hair in this one like he did in the last one?
Yes. That's part of the charm of this. This is sort of not quite James Bondish, not quite
Indiana Jones.
But, you know, we've got... What do we know about Dan Brown? He likes puzzles. Mm-hmm. He likes art. He likes history and pseudo history, and it kind of mixes itself up. This one's based on Dante's Inferno, and I would say Thomas Malthus was a person who brought out a theory that we were going to breed ourselves into extinction, and based on some works that the population is increasing. Anyway, and it also stars that person from Rogue One.
Felicity Jones.
She didn't survive Rogue One.
Spoilers.
Oh my goodness! Did she survive this? I won't give that away.
Okay.
But anyway, I like this film.
Okay.
On a scale 1 to 100, with 100 being best, this is 50-55.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's going to not enjoy watching this film.
Okay.
But I don't think you're going to leave here going saying, oh, this is a great, great film.
There's no conventions that are going to be built around this film. It's just a movie that happens and you move on.
I don't know. Dan Brown's got an interesting following. I mean, obviously his love of puzzles, mm-hmm. and bringing this, I mean, it hits all the right spots.
Yeah.
And Dan Brown books are the modern book. Mm-hmm. Chapters are a page long. You fly through them like a roller coaster. And they're just meant to be read that way. Mm-hmm. You can pick them up, drop them, and you leave going, wow, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a fun adventure. And I love how he describes places. His description of locales is my favorite part of Dan Brown. I've been to many of these places, mm-hmm. and the way he describes them in his writing really brings me back to those places, which
sure.
I enjoy.
And I think we talked about when you read his books, you feel like you've read them again. You're reading the same one.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same structure. Opening this week,
it's a tough week.
Independent film kind of week. We found a few independent films.
It's before the big summer blockbusters mm-hmm. are released, and also, you know, after the Easter holiday. So
yeah, springtime is not for movies generally. We found one called Free Fire. This is set in Boston in 1978, and it seems to all take place in one location, kind of maybe like if it was a play originally, and they made it into a film.
Steve, if we could describe this, let's just say that we all had guns and we were trying to shoot each other.
All in one small room.
There you go.
That's Free Fire, as far as we can tell from the trailer, at least.
So we've got that going for us.
All right. And then there's another movie called The Promise. This is a historical drama about the Ottoman Empire. It's got Poe Dameron in it.
There you go. So there you go. This looks interesting. If it comes up on Netflix at some point, I'll end up watching it. This is certainly not something I'm interested in looking at going to the theater. But, you know, if you dropped into it and you watched it, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Beautiful historic drama. The next one is a documentary called Citizen Jane, The Battle for the City.
Now, this is about city planners in New York. Basically coming through neighborhoods and kind of mowing them down to build the modern city.
Mm-hmm.
Citizen Jane is Jane Jacobs. She looks like she was fighting that. And she said, you know, a city's of people, not of buildings. Now, there's got to be a little bit of play on both sides on that. But I can remember when I was down in Virginia, Norfolk tore down a tremendous amount of their city and rebuilt it into a modern. Everybody had to go someplace. You know, you think downtown Chicago, you know, they've torn down neighborhoods and everybody's got to move to somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, originally they had burnt down the city and then they had to rebuild it. Mm-hmm. You know, that doggone cow. Anyway, this is a more modern version of the 1960s. And we get to hear a little bit of voice, a little bit about planning, and a little bit about the people who live there.
There's a thriller called Unforgettable that's opening this week, starring Rosario Dawson and Katherine Heigl.
This is the Night Nurse, right, for Marvel?
Yes. give me a Rosario Dawson in just about anything.
Yes, this is kind of everybody's nightmare in a divorce setting, right? Mm-hmm. The ex-spouse comes back and decides to hang out. I'm moving in.
Yeah, the hand that rocks the cradle. That's a sort of a scary look at those fears of life.
Go ahead. We'll end it with the last one, which is looks scary.
Phoenix Forgotten is the story of three teenagers who disappeared, and they found the footage. It's one of those found footage movies.
Blair Witch type of movie. Shaky camera. Took place in Phoenix, Arizona. There were lights, Steve. There were UFOs up there.
Yeah.
And then they came and they did something. Yes. They were missing. So anyway, we've got those are our films.
Those are
this
your
week.
Spring films.
So, which will bring us to our next area of as we celebrate Star Wars.
Star Wars celebrations going on down in Orlando, Florida this weekend, and I spent a lot of time watching the streaming footage of all the fun,
which explains sort of the pasty white look you have.
Well, between that and Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Doctor Who, yeah, I pretty much just watched TV this weekend.
Well, that's awesome. Tell me a little bit, what did you find out about during the celebration?
Well, we all know that this year, 2017, is the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. 1977 was 40 years ago, coming up this May 25th.
So I was old enough to see it in the theater, so I am at least older than 40.
Yeah, I was not old enough to see it in the theater. I do have a really clear memory of watching The Empire Strikes Back in the theater with my little sister in her baby carrier in the aisle.
Oh, how wonderful.
I love
now,
it.
There was a Carrie Fisher. Mm-hmm. There was a video basically celebrating her life, which was very touching.
Very.
Anything else that you saw that really grabbed you?
Just the joy. Just the absolute joy that these movies bring to our community of people. It is phenomenal to see the community of people come together to celebrate what is this saga.
Now, some people don't watch trailers, and that would be Steve right here.
I do not watch trailers.
I did watch the trailer, which should probably bring us to some of our guests that are on the program today.
Yeah, we watched a great documentary last week. You brought it to our attention. It's called The Prequels Strike Back, A Fan's Journey. And we have with us today Bradley Weatherholt, the writer and director of that film. Good morning, Bradley.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. This is a wonderful film. And you brought along so much information when you were doing this. You had to bring on your producer and editor, Kyle Broder, with you as well today. Good morning, Kyle.
Hey, how's it going, Steve?
Oh, it's going great, Kyle. It has been a great weekend. Celebration is here. The prequels, I'm not a big fan of the prequels, and your movie really goes into the why we should acknowledge the prequels. The Prequels Strike Back, A Fan's Journey. Brad, can you give us the elevator pitch on this one?
Oh, boy, the elevator pitch. Okay, so pretty much Star Wars is anything but controversial, right? I mean, in the certain communities of Star Wars, there's pretty heated factions on what's canon, what's not, what's good, what's bad. And our film tries to put all of that in perspective, one, but also compare the films together. So what we found when we were exploring, Star Wars and the prequels is a lot of the similarities between all six of Lucas's films. And so our film, it highlights a lot of the good in the prequels. It highlights some kind of not so good in the original trilogy. But really what it does is it celebrates Star Wars and tries to get us to look at the first six films as one big saga, because ultimately, when you look at them all six together, that's when you get some of the richer interpretations and understandings of what Lucas was trying to do.
So, Bradley, what inspired you to make this film initially?
Well, Kyle and I knew we wanted to make a feature. We've been doing a lot of different shorts and educational series on YouTube, and we knew that it was the time to make the jump towards a big, longer, hopefully something that could get a theatrical distribution kind of release. And so we were kind of looking around for topics, and a friend of ours, a mutual friend, shared us a link of the Star Wars Ring Theory, which is this little essay online by a guy named Mike Climo, which goes into the six Star Wars films and how not only do they relate to each other in a parallel manner, they also kind of mirror each other as well. And it was kind of it's pretty meaty stuff if you go read the article. But we thought, wow, what a great concept for at least a short film. I mean, we can at least explain this and put it on YouTube. But then once we reached out to Mike, it kind of exploded because Mike is such an authority on Star Wars that he really opened up my whole entire world to analysis that had been going on about the prequels that I just thought hadn't existed. I mean, I thought it was just kind of standard thought that the prequels were not trash, but well, maybe trash. But they weren't, you know, they weren't Star Wars, or they weren't, you know, the narrative that a lot of us know with the prequels, that they weren't as popular, or they weren't, certainly not on the internet. But he kind of challenged that misconception I had, and from that spawned, you know, our film.
And I've been a prequels denier for a long time. We've been talking about Star Wars on this show for a long time, and I fall into that camp. And boy, your movie really speaks to me as somebody who looked at those prequels and thought that they weren't as good as those, you know, the glory that was 1977 Star Wars.
So, some people think that George Lucas is a Cylon and he had a plan.
And that's really what it comes down to in this documentary that you lay out, is there's a plan, there's a reason for all of this stuff. So, Kyle, I'll ask you, what did you discover along your fan journey here?
I mean, the big thing is I'm not really, I'm probably the least, you know, Star Wars fan out of all of us in the group. So, I mean, for me, I kind of just would watch the films, be like, all right, cool, sci-fi, great. Whatever. And then I remember seeing, you know, the prequels coming out in the theaters. And that's when I actually got to see Star Wars in theaters. And, you know, like a lot of other children, their dad took them to see it because they loved the originals and they wanted to, you know, pass on, you know, this myth, this story to their children. So, I mean, that's kind of what I learned along the way, is a lot of people had that same story of it didn't really, to the parents and to the children, it wasn't so much about, oh, well, the special effects were not, you know, they weren't original or whatever. It was more about, like, here's a myth of Star Wars, and here's another one for the next generation where I can go in the theaters again. I can watch it in theaters again. Now I can bring my kid and go watch it, and you get this whole new experience. So that was really what I discovered, you know, that we weren't alone. There's a lot of people who have had that same thing, and you know, even growing up, I fell into the trap too of being like, well, they aren't as good as the originals. The originals were way better, but that still didn't take away from the fact that I went and saw them with my dad in the theaters, and I had a great time. And there is a lot of the same elements in the movies that you can enjoy, you know, between throughout the whole saga, I should say.
Yeah, my 10-year-old was watching your movie last night, and he got to the mythology part where you explain this whole ring theory, and his eyes were open to the idea of this mythology. He's reading mythology in school right now, and adding the idea of mythology to his dad's love of Star Wars, he really got excited about this. So I want to thank both of you for that, first of all.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. That kind of gives me chills. I'm glad that... I mean, because that's what Lucas did, right? I mean, Lucas opened up so many ideas for younger people. And if we can do that, that's pretty awesome.
Bradley, are fan discussions concerning the prequels different than the original trilogy discussions?
Oh, yeah, definitely different. I mean, the original trilogy is gilded. I mean, when we look back at the original trilogy, there's almost nothing negative that's said. With Return of the Jedi, negativity comes into the conversation. But it's certainly in the first two... You almost never I've never been a part of a conversation where someone was like, wow, the first two Star Wars, they suck, and then the prequels are great or something like that. I've never heard that. I mean, you either like all the Star Wars films or you like the originals and not the prequels, I've found. So when we talk about the conversation about the original trilogy is usually positive. And then the conversation about the prequels is usually negative, or it's certainly more like people are defensive when they talk about it, if they like it. And that's because the overwhelming conversation has been so negative. So what we try to do is kind of bridge that gap. And a lot of the time, most of the time in the movie, we spent trying to establish a tone where people on each side of the conversation would be able to listen to whatever we're saying. Because, you know, Star Wars fans aren't always the most open-minded, just like anything else. I mean, people talk about Star Wars really like they talk about religion or politics. And so to try to, you know, interject our ideas that might be a little bit contradictory to what they had in mind, we had to, you know, really kind of do some aerobics of tone, and hopefully it came across where we're not condescending or we really aren't judgmental in what we're saying.
Oh, I think it was really well toned. Again, I really have a change of mind, a change of heart. I'm going to have to go back and watch those prequels again because of the way that you framed the ideas of these movies.
And I'm going to follow up on that because I had the same feeling. After I watched your film, I wanted to re-experience the prequels with the theories that were being presented to me. The professor from Toronto that sat down and talked a little bit about, I mean, obviously I knew about Joseph Campbell, mm-hmm. and the impact he had on Lucas, but the conversations really were very forgiving, and also elevates Lucas' thought to a much greater depth, which I think people were kind of dismissing during the prequel time, that Lucas wasn't purposely choosing to shoot the movie as he shot it.
Kyle, what was your favorite interview that you saw? We got so many wonderful people with so many different points of view on this. Who was the one that stood out for you?
This is probably the easiest one. I know the one that Brad will say, and it's honestly the best one because it's the Doug Adams music section.
Absolutely, I agree with you. Go on.
Yeah. That's the best. That's the best one, I think. That just gives you, in just so little bit amount of time, just this great wow. What that John Williams did? What, you know, Lucas and John Williams talked, and they did this crazy thing with music. The same thing that kind of Mike Climo talks about with the visuals. You know, Doug talks about with the music, kind of the ring cycle with all that. And that's just a really mind blowing part. And a thing I never thought of, because, you know, everyone loves the Star Wars music. And, you know, I have a friend that would play the Star Wars, you know, soundtracks on repeat almost all the time while we were working. And I still would not even notice that those themes were there until Doug pointed it out.
Yeah,
you know, it's a really neat thing.
Yeah. Brad, can you expound on that? Can you tell us what we're looking at here with this theory of how the music mirrors.
I heard, actually, it's ironic when you said mirrors. I heard a mirror of you saying mirrors.
That was ironic.
It doubled. One of the interesting things about Star Wars and how it was tackled by Lucas and John Williams is that they had the first trilogy first. So they had episodes 4, 5, and 6. So when they were mapping out 1, 2, and 3, they already knew the themes and the ideas and the story that they needed to get to. And so what Williams was able to do with the score of the prequel trilogy was he was able to plant these seeds of ideas and notes that show up later. So one of my favorites actually is in both Anakin and Padme's love theme has a certain bridge of notes. And if you were to dissect those notes in between them, are both Luke and Leia's themes.
It's amazing.
So it's cool to see. It really is crazy. I mean, that's one of the examples. Another example is that constantly throughout the prequel trilogy, there are hints of the Imperial March. I mean, sometimes it's pretty obvious. We can obviously see where Vader's theme is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that Doug does is really take it down to a very small level, and you can see at every turn there are just these little hints and foreshadowings to evil and to the transformations that the characters eventually make.
And I think that's a great example of the depth that your film goes to and basically making it exciting to revisit these movies again.
Going forward, let's leave the prequels for a moment, because I'm still not sold on it, even though I've watched your film and I have to go back and see the prequels again. What is your expectation of the next piece of the trilogy? Did you like The Force Awakens? Do you see some of that myth-making? And what is your expectation for the Last Jedi?
Colin and I have slightly different ideas on this, I think, but pretty much, I mean, we're both optimistic when it comes to the new trilogy. A lot of the people, the irony is, a lot of people who grew up with the prequel trilogy are doing to the sequel trilogy what the original people did to the prequels.
Which is something that Chris said in your movie, was he's expecting that.
Yeah, it is pretty ironic. So much so that I watched the Last Jedi trailer yesterday, and I was a little disappointed. And then I was like, man, am I the only one disappointed? And everyone was like pretty effervescent and enjoyed it. And I was like, oh man, am I becoming, what's happening? It's like, am I becoming Vader here? Like what's going on?
There's
going
to be a movie about you one day.
Yeah. Like, right. Like I'm now the villain. What is happening? But no, I mean, most of it is positive. I do think it was a Star Wars for its time, but I don't think the level of myth making is anywhere on the level that Lucas had, but it does other things better. It does. I mean, it certainly gave the audience what they wanted at its time, where the prequels certainly did not do that. Maybe someone else will be able to make a documentary that opens my eyes a little bit, but I haven't seen any level of complexity or a level of underlying sophistication that we saw with Lucas. But we haven't seen the whole trilogy yet, and who knows what kind of things they'll eventually be telling with the saga.
And Kyle, what do you think about Rogue One? Do you think that fits into this myth in a good way?
To be completely honest with you, haven't even watched it.
Oh, wow. A Rogue One denier.
Honestly, I just have other things to do. Like that's really what it comes down to. I want to watch the tentpole movies, like episode movies. The spinoff series, they look really cool. I think the actors, they look like they did a really good job. I only watched the trailer once because I'm like Steve, I'm not really a trailer watcher. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch this last trailer at all. I like watching the movie when it comes out. So I don't know. I feel like these are so one-off that they from what I can tell, they just kind of deliver on it from the trailer. They deliver on like, here's the mission to the plan. All right, cool. Yeah, all right, here we are. But it fits into the universe, but it doesn't really build on anything is what I really can tell, because that's kind of how I feel with Force Awakens. I thought it was a really fun movie. It was great. But, you know, it felt one-off to me. But I'm hopeful, and I'm ready to see what Last Jedi has to bring.
On some level, The Force Awakens had to mop up what the original trilogy couldn't do. We had to have Han Solo die and all this other stuff to leap forward. And I won't disagree with you on the movies that are not part of the, you know, that we're going back and revisiting. But I would like to hear, did Bradley see Rogue One? And what did he think?
I saw it. I actually liked Rogue One better than The Force Awakens, but I do agree with Kyle on that. It's not, it's certainly not a, when you look at Rogue One, you probably wouldn't tackle it in the same way that you would tackle the tentpole episode movies, because those episode movies are part of the saga, the serialized saga that should, in my opinion, we'll see if Disney agrees or not, should call back to each other and have references and be part of this greater mythological story. Whereas hopefully with the anthology films, we can get these one-off different ideas. I actually really liked Rogue One. I thought it took a lot of risk when you compare it to Force Awakens. I mean, a lot more risk. But my complaint with it, too, is it didn't take enough risk. But, I mean, I guess, you know, beggars can't be choosers here. But I think it certainly is a good sign if we as an audience can support movies that Disney makes that have all of our heroes die or maybe take a different course, then I think that's ultimately a good sign, because hopefully I'm not the only one, but I don't want 10 years from now for the Star Wars films to be so formulaic and we know exactly what's happening, kind of like we have with the whole Marvel universe.
Sure.
I would hope that we would get these really different pieces, because Star Wars is such a rich universe that you can really make some one-off things. I mean, you can really explore certain themes. Sure. and you could make great movies with it. But I think that would take a lot of risk, and Disney certainly isn't going to greenlight a film like that unless we support the little risk that they're taking right now.
So you made a great film. This prequels, Strike Back, the fan journey, this is a great exploration into something that some of us might ignore as a part of the myth building. So what's next for Brad? What are you working on, another project?
Yeah, so right now we're currently working a lot of video essays on our YouTube channel, Ministry of Cinema. So that's where you'll see Kyle and I kind of explore different movies and television shows over the next probably year or so. We're hoping to pop out about a video essay every 2 weeks and build a bigger library there. And then we're going to expand to another documentary. We haven't quite figured out what that's going to be. We have a couple ideas in our minds, but whatever it is, we want it to be big and we want to make sure that we're able to have the audience that we want with this next one. So we want to make sure that we're able to fundraise, really, you know, kind of make the picture that we want to. So it'll probably happen like the Star Wars piece did. It happened so fast. I mean, we went from having no idea to being in production in the course of a month or something. Like, I mean, it was super fast. I mean, wow. We're fundraising. So that's usually how this stuff happens. So we're hoping, our goal is to have that idea by the end of the year, but we'll see. But in the meantime, you'll be able to check us out on our YouTube channel. We're going to be coming out with a whole bunch of essays, anywhere from The Big Lebowski to more tackling of Star Wars to Children of Men to Breaking Bad. I mean, we're really going to be kind of looking at a whole bunch of different things. And if you liked our voice with the prequels, then hopefully that will translate into how we look at other movies as well.
If you want to get the prequel Strike Back, it's out on iTunes now, Amazon, YouTube, VHX, and we are working on getting it on even more popular platforms throughout the rest of the year, so keep looking forward for that.
Fantastic. Once again, that movie is called The Prequel Strike Back, A Fan's Journey. And I want to thank you again for joining us, Bradley Weatherholt, the writer and director, Kyle Broder, the producer and editor. Thank you for making this movie and coming on to talk with us today.
How wonderful.
Thank you, guys.
Brings us to our book of the week, and you have been reading The Hillbilly Elegy, A Memoir of a Family and Culture in Crisis by J.D. Vance. Tell us all about that one.
Now, this was a real fun read. This came out last June, so, you know, it was the summer read last year. A lot of people had very favorable reviews of it. I got to the point where I got it, I read it, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed this book a tremendous amount. Now, this is a gentleman who grew up in Kentucky, and what he's doing is he's looking back at his youth, he's looking back at how he relates to people, and potentially how his growing up sort of a poor Appalachian kid impacts how he views the world today. He escaped this. He joined the Marine Corps, and he ultimately became an attorney after he attended Yale Law School. So he's a very high performer, and he's married. And what I love most about it is it's sort of a review of his youth, what he was looking at growing up. You know, how he got toys, how he treated the house, how his family dealt with each other. And what you really get is this idea of the Appalachia mindset. So the Appalachia mindset, or this area that we would consider probably somewhere around Pittsburgh, north of that, you know, West Virginia, Kentucky, parts of Ohio, western part of maybe Virginia and North Carolina, the western part, I mean, Kentucky, Arkansas, Texas. This is just a fascinating sort of mindset. And you realize, you know, the areas that you grew up in. Now, you grew up in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the eastern part of North Carolina. We would consider ourselves probably Tidewater. There was a book that divided us up into multiple countries within the country.
Yeah.
I would say I have a lot of the traditions of Tidewater. I may have some from the Appalachian. I don't know. But I kept... All you do when you read this book is just look at yourself and say, oh my God, is this me? Mm-hmm. Am I viewing things this way? And is this the right way of viewing things? This is certainly not saying this the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But what it's showing is that, wow, relationships are based on how you interact with these people, the trust you have with people, the things that you have around you and how you treat them and stuff like that. Like I said, this is not saying this is wrong. What it's saying is that if we're going to communicate with a group of people effectively and try to if you're an outsider trying to help or something like that, just recognizing this group of people would be a fascinating journey into you understanding the human condition. I enjoy this because I really find this mindset when I see Scottish people talking about English mm-hmm. people and this independent streak they have in them. And I love it. I love it so much.
The Scottish Highlands and the Appalachian Mountains. That's an interesting mirror there.
Well, you can immediately see if you listen to country music and, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe you go back to the bagpipe and how that kind of plays in, you know, that is the droning of the violin, you know, the same droning that goes on with the bagpipe. Anyway, this is a very quick read. A wonderful deep read. You'll leave with it gleaning lots of good information out of it. I'm so glad he wrote this book. And I can't help but look at myself every time I'm reading. Well, listen, are these the good traits of Chip or the bad traits of Chip? And, you know, are these from my surroundings or are they, you know, inherent to me, nature versus nurture type thing.
Reading can make us better people. This is phenomenal. It's a great suggestion for us. It's called The Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis by J.D. Vance. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Brings us to our appetizer, app of the week, and I've been playing around with YouTube TV all week since they rolled that out last week.
Now, YouTube TV is a streaming TV service. Mm-hmm. It's an alternative to getting cable or satellite.
Right.
And Steve, who is not a person who has cable or satellite.
Right. Haven't had for a long time.
This is your first television service in a long, long time.
This has been a long time coming. And one of the things that people say to me when I say that I don't have cable, they say to me, well, how do you watch sports? Well, those of you who have listened to the show for a while know that I don't watch sports, so that's not an issue for me. But for a lot of people, the reason why they hold on to cable is for the sports. This is quite possibly the first streaming service to keep most of those access points to sports.
In fact, I think that's the most important part of this. Well, this doesn't have everything in it. I think that this is such a wide variety of sports channels. In fact, it's the best one I'm aware of right now, and we'll talk about the weakness of it in just a second. Mm-hmm. But it's got ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN3, which is basically all their streaming games.
The Ocho.
ESPNU, SEC Network, CSN, which is the NBC...
Comcast Sportsnet.
Yeah, that's where we would get the Blackhawks here in mm-hmm. our area. NBCSN, which has got the Premier League and also a lot of motor races and things of that nature. Golf Channel, another NBC property. FS1, FS2, which is both Fox Sports. Big Ten Network and CBSSN, which CBSSN is the weakest link of this, but they do have, for college football, they have a number of the contracts. They also end up getting the overflow. They buy a lot of properties from ESPN. So, my goodness, you've got a wide variety mm-hmm. of sports, you know, along with the networks that are also available here.
Right. All of the Disney channels are here. So you've got ABC, ESPN, Disney, and Disney XD. You've got all the Fox channels, which are a myriad of channels at this point, all the NBC channels. What you don't have are the Turner networks, Viacom, and those HGTV networks that everybody still watches on the cable.
And why Turner is important to this, and by all means, for $35 a month, there has to be some weakness somewhere. Mm-hmm. But it's when we talk about the NCAA tournament that just happened in March, mm-hmm. What you end up having is CBS and Turner end up sharing that contract. So for those early games, they end up having games on True TV, TNT, TBS. And the other thing that Turner also has is a relationship with the NBA. So NBA games, you know, they could play locally here in Chicago, or they could end up playing on ESPN, or they could play on TNT. And so there is a potential of missing a little bit of that. But, you know, overall, I think this is just an incredible lineup. Tell me a little bit about your son's experience, because he's the one who loves sports.
Yeah, he's my sports kid. My 11-year-old has really been the one who's taken to this for this week. The first month is free. The second month is $35 and gets you a free Chromecast when you pay for that second month. And he has really been looking at how he can use this and streaming not only to his phone, because he's an 11-year-old and he has a phone, but he can also beam this to the TV so that he can watch all of those sports games. He's really into hockey right now. Okay. And this is a really good lineup for the hockey matches.
Well, the playoffs have just started.
Yeah. Luckily, he's not into basketball, so he's not missing out on the basketball matches that you mentioned.
All right. So this is also in just a number of markets. They're testing it out.
Right.
Chicago, LA, New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
This could really change television. This is a really, really nice lineup of channels. And when we really get down to the heart of it, $35. I mean, thank goodness the market has driven the price down of television. We were spending over $100 just 10 years ago for
right.
these. Ah, thank you, market.
Yeah. I look forward to utilizing this for the first month and probably the second month as well, but I'm not sure that I'm sold on this concept. There's a lot of other streaming services that are coming around the corner. Hulu is going to be rolling out theirs soon, and Verizon is going to be working on something streaming as well. So I keep an eye out on all of these services.
Well, the beauty is that you can cancel anytime.
That's right.
And you can jump to the new one. So they have to be conscious. They have to be aware of what's going on in the market. Sony's got a version. Apple's looking, threatening a version.
We'll see what happens.
The beauty is you can be agnostic. You can just jump from service to service.
So much easier now to be a cord cutter. I mean, I've been a cord cutter for virtually all my life. I almost never had cable, and I depended on the over-the-air signal, which is still superior, by the way. The over-the-air signal.
Sure.
You can put an antenna on your house right now, and you can get virtually all the stations that you need.
So even coming through the cable, coming through satellite, they're compressing those signals.
Yeah.
So yes, you do get superior service if you can get over the air.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us like convenience, though.
Convenience, fidelity, and convenience. Who needs them? Brings us to our Now the News. Saturday is Earth Day, so happy Earth Day to all of you Earthlings.
Or as we've learned in our community, it's Community Cleanup Day,
yes.
And we plant some trees.
That's great. That is a great use of time as a community coming together and saying, we are going to celebrate and we're going to do these things.
So I thought I'd run through some, I guess, stuff I find that really kind of interests me about Earth Day. One is, I mean, if you ever looked at a picture of the difference between, say, North Korea and South Korea at night through a satellite.
Yeah, I saw it in their show notes. It's pretty stunning to see how much light is coming from one part of our world and not from the other.
Well, I mean, on some level, there's two worlds living here right now. We've got this modern society that has medical treatment and lights and air conditioning and all those wonderful things. And we've got another group of people living, very relatively primitive lifestyles in comparison. And so, it's the recognition of the wonderful world that man has created for itself is something that we cannot take for granted or overstate. We've got food in our belly. We've got air conditioning when it's hot. We got heat when it's cold. My God, it doesn't get, you could not ask for something better. Except for there are also the consequences or the byproducts of those, and the challenges that we face as humans, it kind of riding the ship as we kind of go through that. One of the stories I typically go through is turn of the century, 1900s. You got horse and buggies running through your town. There's poop everywhere. There's rats everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's dirty. It's smelly and all that other stuff. Well, eventually we replace that with these automobiles with their leaded fuel. which gets us to move so much better, and cars go down in price, and we all get cars. How wonderful. And then you start, you remember the 70s, you know, all the smog everywhere. Mm-hmm. So what do? We take the lead out of the fuel, we get catalytic converters, and all of a sudden we all have cars again. But now we're almost at a new age where, you know, your next car potentially, either hybrid or moving on over to an electric vehicle. The electric vehicle allows you to take the pollution that's going to be from every individual and move it to a single location in your community, and you can deal with it in this one area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's human progress and all the wonderful ways, assuming that we don't have other crazy things going on before then. And one of the podcasts I got to listen to this week was Science Versus, where they talked a little bit about climate change, or they call it the apocalypse. And what they were, I love Science Versus. This Australian lady sits there and in her jovial, happy voice, tells you about all these crazy things and then the science behind it. And one of the nice things about it is it tells you a little bit about, some people could say, hey, do humans, this could be natural. Do humans really impact the environment like this? Well, the beauty is that we actually have measurements that we can show what is human carbon, or when I say human carbon, carbon's made by human, and versus things that are natural. And part of it is when you burn fossil fuels, it doesn't show any life in it because the life was dead mm-hmm. for so long. So they actually can break that out. It's kind of cool. Hmm. And it also talks a little bit about how humans react, and ultimately doesn't really totally address it, but you can think of it. Eventually you can have a conversation. You know, what is the right balance of that? And is it okay to deny one group of people? And let's think about it this way. If for some reason North Korea opened up and became part of the rest of the world, you know, is it fair to deny the North Koreans all the pleasures that the people in South Korea have? Or, you know, think of the people in Africa and in some of the more remote communities. Should they be denied the medical treatment and the services and the foods and the air conditioning and things like that we enjoy in the Western part of society? That's a pretty deep question, far more than we're going to deal with right here. But what I'm saying is that there are always fun things to glean from this. I also put in our notes a interview with Judith Curry. She was a professor at Georgia Tech before she retired earlier this year. And she talks a little bit of the politics involved in studying climate change and the science versus the politics that makes things very, very challenging. And if we can think about what a climate change denier could be, this is typically where we're following. You know, if they're an educated denier, then it's typically right here that there's a lot of politics involved in the science. There's all sorts of people out there. We have in Qatar, which is a desert mm-hmm. in the Middle East.
Right.
It's a desert. They are working to try to green this desert. And we can think a little bit about that. It happens here in the United States. We irrigate, we bring water in uh-huh. from Colorado down the rivers, and they go right to the deserts in California. We get oranges, we get fruit, we get all this other stuff. But what they're looking to do is see if they can change the environment to have that naturally happen. And so they've got these greenhouses out there, and they're growing cucumbers and all that other stuff. But outside that area, they've got scientists from all over the world. Qatar's got plenty of money. They can do whatever they need to do. Mm-hmm. They're trying to turn the landscape from sand, you know, to this grassland.
Arid area, yeah.
And which brings me to another interesting article I found about the Amazon rainforest. There was a paper that was presented that was suggesting that the rainforests could be man-made.
Johnny Rainforest Seed.
Could be. Anyway, I found it fascinating. I'm interested in reading more about this. But, you know, it's amazing how...
an interesting idea.
Okay, yeah. They planted the trees that they wanted because mm-hmm. they wanted the fruits or whatever it was.
Right.
They needed the soil for it. They needed to build the soil on it. And over the time, think of the diversity, biodiversity that's going on in that area. We typically think of these rainforests as being world treasures, which mm-hmm. they are. But I mean, it's just fascinating. The soil is incredibly rich. It's where the big snakes live.
Watch out for snakes.
All the other good stuff. And I'll leave you with this Russian group. They're trying to create like Jurassic Park out there. It's not the Jurassic period, but it doesn't really matter. They're trying to bring back mastodons, and they're actually spending time. This is in Russia. This is real.
Yeah.
They're cutting down trees. They're creating these great big grasslands. In fact, the quote the guy says, in general, I like trees, but here they are against our theory. The theory was these grasslands are where these great bison and the ox and the mastodons rode. And like I said, they're making a Jurassic Park out there.
Oh, jeez. That's just going to end in tears. Jeff Goldblum has something to say about all of this.
In Russia, we make the dinosaurs.
In Russia, the dinosaurs are fine.
And finally, out in Montana, there's a group of people who've bought a tremendous amount of land. They got about 500,000 acres they're dealing with.
Wow.
Now, we've got the largest landowners in the United States. I can't think of the one of them, but anyway, it goes back and forth with Ted Turner.
Okay.
And Ted Turner has all this land. He he's brought back buffalo. There's herds and herds of them. They roam freely. But anyway,
sweeping majestically.
Exactly. It's going to be like Dancing with Wolves out in Montana. But anyway, this group called the American Prairie Reserve is this private group that is trying to recreate this grassland that you can hike across and get hunted down by the wolves. Go back to nature right there.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in my house, make sure that you are checking on your version of Windows, because Windows Vista is officially dead.
Well, some people use Vista. I use Vista.
I never had a copy of Vista. I never had one at school, and I never had one here at the house.
Now, I had an old laptop that actually had Vista on it, and I used Vista all the way up until Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I skipped even 7.
Almost. Wow. 7 and 8, and you went straight to 10.
I
had XP on quite a few machines. All of our machines at school were running XP. We never updated to Vista. We went straight from XP to 7, which I think is what most people did.
Well, the point of this is without the updates, you're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so they're asking you to update to Windows 10.
Right.
If you're using an old PC, either replace that PC,
yeah.
And you can get a new PC or a new Mac. Or Linux, as some people go.
Yeah, there's great things being done with Linux right now.
But really, these things can't last 10 years. They're just not that strong. So technology changes. Either replace the computer with something more modern or update the software.
Right. Speaking of software, Burger King is they're trying real hard to get my money, and they get a lot of my money, just to be fair. But Burger King added a phrase to their commercials that activated the Google Home system.
Oh, that's pretty awesome, isn't it? Burger King historically has been pretty experimental in their advertising, from Sneaky King, that was an Xbox game at one time too.
Yeah.
To their what was the chicken that you could tell them, the subservient chicken, you could basically tell it what to do, and it would do like push-ups and sit-ups and whatever you told it to. And if you said something too naughty, it would wave your finger.
Nice.
And oh, it's pretty funny. In fact, you can go to the website now, subservientchicken.com. But anyway, this one, did you know that?
You're just sending people to naughty websites again, aren't you?
It is not a naughty website. But it was very funny at the time. But what ended up happening is they had this new ad that would... He goes, well, I'm going to tell you about it. But anyway, okay, Google, tell them about the Whopper.
Uh-huh.
And it would take your Google Home,
mm-hmm.
your little orb, your egg... And it would send it, and it would go to Wikipedia, and it would tell you all about the Whopper. But you know, there's
Wikipedia—that's a secure site that nobody will ever mess with.
It was Stephen Colbert used to go on to Wikipedia live in his presentation, and he would change the story. He goes, "I can change it however I want," uh-huh. And that's where the name Truthiness came from. But anyway, obviously the internet loves you,
yeah,
and the internet wants to have fun. And all of a sudden, the Whopper started having mutilated kids in it, and cyanide, and all sorts of stuff. And so, what did Bodie McBoakface do?
He's the one who changed it.
No, Right. The moral here is the internet is not your friend. The internet may love you, but is not your friend. And anytime there's a chance for the internet to have some fun with you, they will.
Yeah.
And so Burger King quickly took down this ad campaign.
Yeah. But it's still successful. We're still talking about it. So good for them.
There you go. And there is an understanding that public relations, actually having podcasts and newspapers talk about your, is worth far more than any ad they can purchase.
That's right. Boy, I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. I want to thank our guests, Bradley Weatherholt and Kyle Broder, from their movie, The Prequels Strike Back, A Fan's Journey. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about that phenomenal documentary. If you haven't seen that, I really recommend that you go pick that one up. If you need more information, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com, to find all the news that you need to survive another week. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
Misa Jar Jar.
See you in the future.